Hey everyone, this is Brian from the Tennis IQ Podcast. Josh and I hope that you are enjoying the content and discussions that we put out week after week. If you'd like to support the podcast and help us to continue to produce quality episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Currently, we have three tiers of support: the fan level at $3 per month, the supporter level at $7 per month, and the champion level at $20 per month. Benefits of joining the Tennis IQ podcast community include episode transcripts, participation in book club discussions, and access to monthly masterclasses with me and Josh. For more on these benefits of support, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Thank you so much. And now, on to the show.
Welcome to the Tennis IQ Podcast. I'm Josh Berger.
And I'm Brian Lomax. And our topic today is the topic of suffering, often thought of as perhaps maybe not the most exciting word, Josh, or something that gets people sort of happy and positive. But we're going to look at it more from a philosophical perspective first, and how the concept of suffering actually applies to the playing of a tennis match. And this topic came to mind more recently for me as I was talking to one of the players I work with, describing some of the things that he had been experiencing on the court, and how sort of without using the term suffering, he was managing his way through matches and understanding that good things happen, not so good things happen, and it wasn't about getting caught up in those things. It was more or less moving through them and tolerating them and understanding that was the nature of it. So we then had a conversation about this topic of suffering, and it immediately connected with him that's the nature of the sport. So I thought that this would be good to talk about for our audience, because oftentimes when we engage with players, they don't necessarily understand how the sport really works. I mean, they do, but they, from an experiential perspective, it's difficult to be able to deal with good things happening, not so good things happening, and try to remain calm and present and get yourself all the way to the end. So what are your thoughts on just the concept of suffering in tennis?
I think it's an important concept that everybody has to go through it to a certain extent. Having that understanding that there will be those ups and downs. I know we've talked about this concept a lot, we've talked about this concept that there will be ups and downs, that there will be breaks of serve and you will lose matches, and there always are those ups and downs. And this word inevitable has come up a lot, because I feel like that's a word I often use in connection with that, because I really feel like there is a certain inevitability to these sorts of things happening, right? Nobody goes through their tennis career without these down periods, without whether that's in a match, right, where maybe you feel like, okay, my level has slipped, whether that's over the course of a career or over the course of a season, there are always ups and downs. So I think being ready for them, expecting that, expecting to have to suffer, in some extent. And I think we can also think about how that word is used, because it's, as you said, it's different from maybe the general usage of that word in our society. I think being ready for that makes it just so much easier when you're actually in that moment. If you've done the work ahead of time, if you've prepared ahead of time to suffer, to be dealing with this turbulence, and then you have the skills to be resilient in that moment, and you can, have perspective about a situation as it's happening, it's so much easier to handle.
And maybe to bring some more context to the word suffering, Josh, because what we mean by it here, because we do want to give it the sort of the correct meaning that we're looking for. And I think one way to do that is let's first tie it to sort of some of the basics of Buddhism, because there is a concept of suffering in life. And, tennis in some ways mirrors life, right? It's a microcosm. It's a way for us to train ourselves for the more difficult challenges that we may face in life. Maybe, bigger stakes are on the line. So I'm going to quote from an article, Basics of Buddhism, from PBS.org. Says, more simply put, suffering exists. It has a cause. It has an end. And it has a cause to bring about its end. The notion of suffering is not intended to convey a negative worldview, but rather a pragmatic perspective that deals with the world as it is and attempts to rectify it. And I think that that last part is really important from a tennis perspective, is that what we've described as the ups and downs of a match, that is reality. We would prefer, perhaps, that it wasn't, but it is. And so we have to come to accept the nature of things, the nature of how a tennis match will go, rather than fighting it. Yes, we would all love to play brilliantly from the beginning to the end, never lose a point, hit, 20 aces in a match, all these things. We would prefer for that to happen. The likelihood of it happening are very small. And this is something that I think one player in particular has really embraced and has used this word many times is Rafael Nadal. And he notes his embracing of the fact that tennis matches is suffering through the pain, maybe both physical and emotional pain, but trying to enjoy that process, trying to be proud of yourself when you do get through it. And I think psychologically, what we have a hard time dealing with, Josh, is that in tennis, as in life, we're often gravitating toward immediate gratification. And in as you know, I know you've said this many, many times on this podcast, right? That tennis gives you instant feedback. You either won the point, lost the point, made a mistake, hit a great shot, right? And you're getting that instant feedback. So that's like instant gratification, the immediate gratification. Yet the ultimate prize in tennis is not just what happens in that point. It's really, can you get through this process all the way to the end and get the ultimate gratification of finishing the match somehow? And on that path, that's where the suffering occurs. That's where the physical pain occurs, the emotional pain. And I think the more that we as players, coaches, learn to accept that that is the nature of the match, that is how it is. Can we accept it? And then learn to embrace that, possibly even enjoy that struggle. We'll be able to be, I think, calmer throughout the match. And I think what is really important, especially in close matches, is that that approach will allow you to be calmer and more present in the end when opportunities may present themselves, say at 4-4 or 5-4 in a third set. The more that you're calm and present and have been through the pain of getting to that point, and done better with that, you'll be able to see the opportunities more clearly. You'll be able to make better decisions about what to do next. One of the players I work with, he was in a situation like this over the weekend, and he was actually down 5-4 in the third set. And he's one of the players I had talked to about this concept of suffering, and he was embracing that. And his opponent was serving for the match at 5-4. And yet he still was able to be calm enough and present enough to make a small change in his game that allowed him to break serve in that moment and then win the next two games to win the title. So, he won the final of this particular tournament. But he couldn't have done that without understanding the nature of how the sport works, because you could easily look at being down a break in the third and your opponent serving for the match as, oh, this sucks. worked so hard to get here, and now I'm going to lose. But he didn't look at it that way, right? And he just fought back, and he understands like a Rafael Nadal, who's come through so many difficult matches in the end to come out on top. And that's how a guy like Nadal does that, is he's able to understand the reality of the way this works. And by staying more present and more calm in those moments, he can capitalize on opportunities in the end.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of truth to the idea that when you're in that, after having been through that suffering, after having been through those ups and downs, those times where maybe you served for a match or you served for a set and were broken, the things have a way of turning around or of continuing to go up and down or continuing to fluctuate. So if you're in the right present, the right state of mind, then you can capitalize on it. If you're frustrated, if your opponent is serving at 5-4 and you're so frustrated about being in that position and your self-talk is really negative and you're not aware enough to notice, hey, what are the dynamics of the match right now? What is my opponent doing? What are maybe some weaknesses or some vulnerabilities that I can try to capitalize on? Maybe my opponent's really tired at this point. Maybe I haven't been utilizing a certain tactic enough that I plan to use going into a match, or something I picked up during the match. If from an emotional standpoint, you're so wrapped up in what's been happening, then you're not able to capitalize on that moment, and you're not being present. I think being present has a lot to do with this, and obviously, also with Buddhism and mindfulness. I think there's certainly a lot of connection there. But I think, by being present in this moment after that suffering has taken place, then we're able to really be aware of what is going on, and then you're able to the best of your abilities, try to capitalize, try to make decisions that can, hopefully give you a better chance to be successful. I actually think back to somebody that I've been working with, a non-tennis player, a soccer player actually, and they were telling me recently that they'd make a mistake, maybe they'd miss a shot, for instance, and then they'd be very focused on trying to get it back, trying to sort of get it back, or
Yes.
trying to, improve on, change what had happened almost by making up for it the next play.
Yeah,
And I
I've heard a
see
lot of that
this.
from soccer players, Josh. That's very common.
And we had a conversation about how in reality there is no way to get it back, 'cause it's happened. It's done. The play happened, you missed the shot, and it's over. There's no way to get it back or to make up for it. All that you can do is to reset and start really focusing on the next play. And if you're so focused on what happened, then it's going to impact your ability to play well in that next play. And the same is absolutely true in tennis, where rather than something like soccer, where maybe you have, like a forward, for instance, they take a shot and maybe they don't have another opportunity like that for another 5 minutes, or maybe it's 20 minutes. In tennis, there always is that next point coming. You might be down love 40 in that point. The score might be totally different in the next time you have an opportunity, the next time a point starts, but there's always that next point. So recognizing that there's no way to get it back, there's no way to make up for it, but we have to be present, and by being present, we're able to give the next point the attention that it deserves, right? And I know this is something you've talked about, Brian, a lot, that next point really being the most important point of the match. And that's something I've talked to people about as well, because it really is the only one that we have any sort of control over or impact over. So I think that this connects to that concept of suffering, just understanding that despite all those ups and downs, despite everything that's happened, we need, in order to be the best competitors we can be, we need to put ourselves in a position to be able to disregard all of that. Disregard whatever's happened up to this point and be fully present, be fully here in the here and now in this moment, in order to give ourselves the best chance and in order to play that next point with the awareness of and maybe the learnings from what has happened up to this point and what has happened, you know, in this match and maybe before this match, and really under, you know, have that third level tennis IQ where I'm not just focused on myself and I'm not just focused on my opponent, but I'm focused on all these dynamics. But we can only get there by really putting that last point behind me and that the rest of the match, everything that's led up to this point behind me, and really being present and focusing on now in this upcoming point.
The concept of making up for a mistake that you brought up with the soccer player is very interesting because if we stay with soccer for a moment, oftentimes when players do that, they actually compound the original mistake. They might, you know, foul and make it even worse. And so it's a, in tennis, maybe we don't exactly do that, but maybe we do. Maybe we end up making another mistake on the next point because we're still so concerned with the mistake on the last point. Or whatever bad happened, right? And by not understanding sort of the nature of the way the sport works, we can actually end up making more mistakes and make the suffering even more difficult. So I think that's a great analogy, Josh, to bring in. Great perspective. One article that I think we should link in the notes, Josh, was from CNN. I don't even know when this was. So sometime in 2022. But the name of the article is "This World-Class Athlete Talks Like Aristotle and Acts Like Confucius. We Can All Learn From Him." And it's about Rafael Nadal. And there are essentially four lessons, sort of philosophical lessons, presented by the author of this article that Nadal embodies either through his actions and or his words. And lesson number one is embrace your suffering. And it talks about a story at the 2022 Madrid tournament where Nadal played David Goffin, and Goffin had four match points against him. And then Nadal comes back, wins this match after, you know, looks like 3 hours and 10 minutes. Kind of a typical Nadal day at the office, really, if you think about it. He seldom beats people quickly. As maybe you think he should, but he rarely does, right? He's out there and gets through it, but he often his matches are not that short. And so the quote from Nadal after this match is, I think, you know, on the lines of what we've been discussing, he says, "I always said it many, many times. You have to learn how to live with these kind of moments and also to enjoy this suffering. It's what we work for thrilling moments." And it's in a way, when you read that, it's like you got to go through the suffering in order to get to the thrilling part. A tennis match, in some ways, it's like an obstacle course. It's like a Spartan race. A lot of different things that you must get through in order to get to the end. And obstacle course races they're not easy. But how do you feel in the end when you've gotten through all of that? That's really what a tennis match is like, and you have to get through a lot of these things in order to have the breakthrough, to have the ability to create the thrilling moment, to create the victory, to create the win. I think the other thing that Nadal has also said, that it's not just about the winning of these types of matches. You know, he played a great match against Dominic Thiem. I want to say 2018 at the US Open, where he lost the first set 6-0, and then he came back and won in five sets. I think it was 2018. Maybe it may have been a different year. But there's a great press conference of Nadal talking about that match and how, noting that Thiem did all the things he needed to do to win the match. You know, and it just comes down to a few points in the end, and he said, you know, it's sometimes you get lucky. You know, today was for me. I played other matches like this, and you know, where I played great all the way to the end, and it didn't go for me. And he said, but the feeling is the same, meaning For him, personal satisfaction on the court wasn't just about the winning part after going through all that suffering. It was about, did I play with my best attitude? Did I give this my best effort? And if I have given everything that I could, whether I win or whether I lose, then I have that personal satisfaction that I did everything that I could. And I think this goes along with that, is that in this very difficult process of trying to win a tennis match, can you maintain great attitude, great effort? Can you continue to give your best the whole way through? Because you're going to win matches, you're going to lose matches, but where does the satisfaction really come from? From knowing that you did everything you could that particular day with whatever you had that particular day. So I think Nadal's a great guy to learn from. He's almost like sort of our resident professional tennis philosopher in many ways, in listening to him talk about these things. So, very good article. There are other lessons in here from philosophy that Nadal embodies. So, we'll link to this in the show notes.
Yeah, I remember that match, and he lost that first set 6-love. And I think I would ask whoever's listening, and I know I've asked other people this in the past, what is your state of mind after losing a set 6-love? For most people, it's not very positive. Most people are very self-critical, maybe swearing at themselves, maybe they're throwing the racket, maybe they're saying things out loud. It's obvious that there'd be some level of frustration for anybody losing a set 6-love. It can feel humiliating. It can feel certainly frustrating, disappointing. You could feel like your game has let you down. But I think when it comes to Nadal, one thing that I think of with him is he seems to really not carry in such high expectations. He never says, talks about himself winning a tournament in the middle of it. He always goes in giving each opponent such credit and, saying, "Hey, I know I have to play my very best to have a chance against this opponent." And oftentimes this opponent is ranked a lot lower than him. He has currently dropped out of the top 10, but he's been in the top 10 every single week since 2005, I believe, and w which was a record, I think like 900 something weeks. So he's often would talk about players ranked significantly lower than him and talk about, how he would have to do his best, how he, had respect for them. And he didn't have these expectations, he doesn't have these expectations that I should be winning these tournaments. I'm supposed to win these tournaments. Okay, now it's clay court season. Okay, I should win Roland Garros again. And I think so many players, maybe, most players go into matches with expectations and tell themselves, okay, this should be easy, or I'm supposed to win this match 6-0, 6-0, or I'm supposed to not lose too many games here. And then when it's not like that, when, okay, I'm telling myself I should win 6-0, 6-0 because this person has a lower UTR than me. And then all of a sudden it's a tight first set, or it's a tight match, or I lose a first set. I think the vast majority of people, rather than looking to dig in and maybe embracing that challenge and embracing that suffering that comes along with it, those unfulfilled expectations turn into frustration and disappointment, and then they let that out in different ways. They let that out through their body language, through their self-talk, sometimes through their decision making. Sometimes you see players tank. Maybe they stop moving their feet. Maybe they stop, really trying to give each point their full effort. And I think if we can go in expecting that we're going to have days where we're not at our best, we're going to have days and matches where we're just not playing our best game. We're gonna have parts of matches as well where we're not playing our best. But a big part of being a tennis player is withstanding that suffering, is withstanding whatever our opponent throws at us and trying to be a little bit better than our opponent on that day. And that doesn't take perfection. It does not take perfection. There's a famous sports psychology book, Golf is Not a Game of Perfect by Bob Rotella. And tennis is the exact same way. Tennis is not a game of perfect. I think a lot of perfectionists or people with perfectionist tendencies find their way into sports like tennis and golf because of that individual nature of the sport. But it's certainly not a sport of perfect. It's certainly not, and it's also not a matter of, okay, my forehand is 8 out of 10 today, and my volleys are 6 out of 10, and my serve is this, and my backhand is this, and I'm adding up my characteristics, and I'm comparing that to an opponent. That's not how the sport works. It's not about who has better strokes on a particular day. It's about who wins the last point, who wins the match, right? And understanding that we don't have to be perfect, understanding that those ups and downs are inevitable, understanding that on some days you will physically be at a higher level than others. I think having those understandings, having that awareness makes it so much easier to handle those moments when they happen and in a certain way embrace them so that you can be fully present, fully there in that moment and give yourself the best possible chance.
Some of my favorite matches that I have played, Josh, the ones that I'm almost more proud of, are the ones where I've played poorly or it's been a rather ugly match, but I managed to get through it. And those have been some of the more personally satisfying because, yeah, the sort of the aesthetic quality of the match was not great, but the ability to kind of manage through that, stay calm, be okay with playing maybe sort of an uglier style, and maintaining a focus on what is really important. Those are some of the best memories I have of wins in big tournaments. So I think we do as tennis players often put a little bit too much importance on the level of play, on perhaps the technical or aesthetic qualities of the way the game looks. And when you watch a guy like Roger Federer, who looks so, balletic out there, so graceful, it's hard to not fall in love with that style of tennis, but many of us are not able to replicate that. And that's just him. And we also are in a culture in which we see lots of highlights. Highlights typically show, winners and great shots, but when you look at the percentage of points that that represents in an actual tennis match, it's a very small percentage. Most of it is grind and tedious and non-exciting. It's managing, you're sort of getting through different stages of games and sets in order to get yourself to a moment in where something can actually be won. So I think your point about the skill piece is something we do fall into a trap with. Many times we are almost looking at tennis as a competition of one's skills, where it's really not. Skills are weapons, and we use weapons to achieve an objective, but it's not comparing one's forehand or whatever. I often think about, like, the NHL, National Hockey League, has in their All-Star weekend, they have this skills competition, which is great. But that's not what gets you in the Hockey Hall of Fame. That you're the fastest skater, that you're the most accurate shooter, or you have the hardest slap shot. It's the same in tennis. You're not getting into the Hall of Fame because you can hit, 25,000 shots cross court in a row or whatever. Even that you have perfect technique, that's not getting you in the Hall of Fame. You have to know how to use these skills to go through the suffering and the battle of tennis matches so that in the end you can pull out victories. But of course, everybody loses as well. So how can you handle that aspect of the suffering of your own career? Because we also will go through streaks in which our confidence is down. Maybe we've lost a few matches. Perhaps we've had some unlucky draws. We're having to play people for whatever reason that are much better than us, and we're not getting an opportunity to really go out there and compete against somebody who we can actually show our stuff against. These are normal things that we have to learn to deal with. And as I said before, these types of things happen in life as well. And life is kind of this challenge, this suffering. Things are not going to be perfect. Things are not going to be always exactly as we wish, but can we do like what Nadal says and bring your best effort, your great attitude, and understand the nature of life, the nature of reality, the nature of the process of trying to win a tennis match. And when you do that, then you're going to have a much not easier time, but I suppose it would be much easier than fighting the reality of how it works.
Absolutely. I wanted to go back to something that you said earlier about some of those most satisfying wins being maybe matches where things didn't go your best, or maybe it wasn't there weren't the moments where you necessarily played your best throughout the match. And I think I would 100% agree with that. And I think I can think back to certain matches in particular where maybe I started off the match not playing great, or I lost the first set. And I really had to fight. I really had to utilize some of my skills, my mental skills, my physical skills. I had to, I had to really apply all of that. And I compare that to other matches where maybe I feel like I played really well throughout. And, and in terms of just my level of my strokes, I was probably at a higher level that day. But that's not as rewarding. In many ways, that's actually a lot easier. It's a lot easier to play when everything's going smoothly. Yes, there's ways to apply your mental skills in those moments, but it doesn't necessarily feel as necessary as those days where things aren't going as well, where there's a lot more of those ups and downs, where maybe you're not as consistent, or you're not playing, your A game quite as much. So I think it's, especially during those moments where it's necessary to really apply these skills. But I think that there's more of a payoff. It is more rewarding. And I actually think back to the book Winning Ugly, and that book, I know I've mentioned this before, and if people haven't read that, I would definitely suggest checking it out. A book by Brad Gilbert, where he talks about this same concept, and I think he is an exemplary person to be talking about it as well. Somebody who was known for not having the best strokes in the world, and got all the way up to the top of the game, got all the way up to number four in the world, beat just about all the top players, got into coaching as well, and really, I think, understood this concept, quite well, and just understood that you don't have to be playing your best on a particular day to win. And I think we see this at the highest levels of the sport, whether it's Nadal, whether it's other players, and how they're able to fight, how they're able to put things behind them, how they're able to still win with their B game or their C game, or maybe worse on certain days. But what they do is they give themselves a chance. After Nadal lost that set 6-love, it would have been very easy to just say, you know what? It's not my day. I don't have my strokes. Dominic Thiem is hitting that one-handed backhand too well today. You know what? It's not my day. And I think most players probably would have done that, or some variation of that. But I think if we can dig deep, and I think if we can, there's a great question from that book, Winning Ugly. Who's doing what to whom? And be able to ask ourselves, all right, why is the score? Why was it 6-love? Maybe Thiem was, came out hot. He was, really striking the ball well. Maybe Nadal's timing wasn't quite there, which is kind of what I recall of that match, sort of a combination of things. And oftentimes it is a combination of factors. So if we can first, try to really understand, why is the score the way it is? What's actually happening out there? Is it my opponent? Is it me? Is it oftentimes some combination? And really understand that, and can we also, and I think this also fits into what we're talking about with suffering and being aware and some of these sorts of concepts, these concepts that more so originated with some of these Buddhist ideas, can we look at things objectively? Right? I think most times when people lose a set six love, or you are down to somebody that you think you should be beating, it's tough to look at things objectively in that moment. We tend to look at things through our own eyes and put our own spin on it. But if we can look at things objectively and almost take ourselves out of the situation and imagine that we're watching from the stands or watching on TV, and ask ourselves, why is this, why is the score actually the way it is? What actually is happening out there? Can I broaden my perspective and be aware enough to understand the dynamics of the match and understand what's actually happening? Then it's a lot easier to make adjustments. Then it's a lot easier to understand that your opponent might not be able to maintain their level. Also, once again, the dynamics can change. There's ups and downs. Once the tides start to turn, will your opponent be able to keep up that level? Will your opponent maybe crumble or mentally, have more challenges in that stage of the match? So I think, if we can take ourselves out of the situation and not imagine that it's just happening to us, but be a little bit more objective, I would say it's a lot easier to really address what's happening. And when we think, even at a micro level, when we think about our in-between points routine, that's a key part of it, to be able to, during that first step. And we did a whole episode about this, about the in-between points routine, that I would encourage people to check out if they haven't listened to it, because that's certainly in the moment, an important way to put that last point behind us. But during that first step, right after that last point has finished, we want to mentally be able to review what happened, but objectively, not through our own eyes. Oh, I always do this on my backhand, blah, 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 blah. But can we think of it from an outsider's perspective? Can we be objective, non-judgmental about what happened and really try to notice what happened and try to learn from it? And by learning from it, we give ourselves a better chance to make the changes that are necessary to improve and to give ourselves a chance to turn things around.
Yeah, I think one last point on that Nadal match against Thiem, because the press conference after the match is sort of a master class in how to do these things and sort of philosophically. And he at one point is asked, what did you do after that first set? Did you change the tension in your string, because it didn't seem like the ball was coming off the strings? And so Rafa took a moment to really address that. That's not the moment to find excuses. Which, again, if you don't understand the nature of the way the sport works, you can start looking for all these reasons why you're not playing great. And he said, I'm not the guy to look at the string or the racket or the box. I'm the guy to look at myself and to understand what's going on. And you used the right word, Josh, that he used, which was the dynamic. I think the dynamic of the match was, yeah, he wasn't feeling the ball, he wasn't timing it well. But he was also playing way too far behind the baseline and letting Thiem move him around too much, right? So he said, all right, I had to change the dynamic. I had to come in closer to the baseline, and I had to be more aggressive. And yeah, then he goes on to win that second set, 7-5. But the key was that, he wasn't looking for excuses. He was looking for ways to change the dynamic, things that he could do better. And he noted that at 4-0, he said, All right, let's just finish this set and start the next one. And when we have difficult sets like that, you have to come up with perspectives that, whether they're real or not, doesn't matter, but that they're productive for you. Perhaps it's like, okay, I'm warmed up now. Got all the bad stuff out. So a 6-0 set, that's fine. Let's go. Let's start from zero. That's the beauty of tennis. In this sort of format of 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 5, you get to go back to zero. Imagine if this was a match where it was a 12-game pro set or something. Like, now you're down by six. You're gonna be down by six the whole time. Really hard. If the objective is to get to 12, and you have to win 12 games and the other person only has to win six. Very different than the sets, right? Because now the games are less important. All right, yeah, you lost 6-0. Doesn't matter whether you lost 6-0 or 7-6, you're still down one set. So who cares? Move on, right? And you have to have productive perspectives that allow you to move on to that next moment and put it in the right context. So for Nadal, it's like, all right, let's just finish the set and get started on the next one, where I'm going to change the dynamic and try to play better. And he did. You know, in the end, I think he won that match in a fifth set breaker. Yeah, he did. He changed everything. So I would actually, maybe we can also link to that, Josh, in the show notes is the this press conference. First, like 5 minutes are like philosophical gold for tennis players. And I think the whole thing is like 9, 10 minutes. So it's not terribly long, but a real master class in how to get through matches like this that are difficult and so forth. And this was one of those matches, I think, also that ended at like 1 or 2 in the morning, and he's doing this press conference at like 3 or 4.
As so many matches seem to these days at the pro level.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so he's just a great example of how to handle and embrace that suffering in tennis matches.
Absolutely, no, absolutely, and I think there's a number of matches I can think of from him where, yeah, he's lost the first set, or even he's lost the first two sets. And this is not to say that this is not true of other players. You know, Djokovic is a player. You know, I can think of times where he's lost the first two sets, come back to win, even in the biggest of moments, right? Even in the biggest of moments at the, you know, Grand Slam finals, things like that. But I think it's the way that, first of all, the amount of times Nadal has done it, and also the way that he talks about it. He really does. I remember that article that you're talking about, because he really does talk about things in sort of this, you know, without expectations, without ego. You know, he's not going in talking about how he shouldn't have lost that set 6-love, right? Or that, you know, oh, I know that I'm the better player, or anything like that, right? He's not bringing up all the Grand Slams that he had won up to that point. He's talking about, you know, how he needs to look within and needs to, in order to turn things around, he needs to be better himself. He's not looking for excuses. I think one thing that we see so often, and I guess this is, you know, I think this is maybe an increase over the last, let's say 10 years or so. Is players looking at their box, players, you know, getting mad at their box. And I think of Nick Kyrgios as an example here, but there's, we see it with Daniil Medvedev. We see it, you know, all over the ATP and WTA tours, players that when things aren't going well, somehow it's not their fault. Somehow it's the people in their box's fault. Their coach, their partner, their family, their strength and conditioning coach, their sports psychology professional. Somehow it's their fault for the preparation or for whatever led up to it, rather than players really being able to, you know, take responsibility and use their problem solving, right? Use their problem solving, use their ability to make adjustments, use their awareness of the dynamics of the match. By, you know, really taking responsibility, you're able to give yourself a better chance. But when we look for excuses, when we say it's just not our day, then we don't have a chance to turn things around. You know, what the likelihood of turning around a match after losing a set 6-love is a lot lower, right? That if we look at the percentages, if we had Craig O'Shaughnessy talking about the percentages of winning a match after certain situations, if we looked at the percentage of winning a match after losing a set 6-love, it's a lot lower, obviously. But what we need to do is be able to, use these skills that we've talked about in this episode and in our past episodes. Can we reset? Can we put it behind us? Can we not take things so personally? Can we separate our ego and our expectations from the situation itself and say, okay, what do I actually need to do here? Do I need to make an adjustment? Do I need to have a better attitude? Do I need to move my feet more? Is it my decision making? what actually needs to be done or changed or adjusted in order for me to have a chance, right? When we've lost this at Six Love, it's about giving ourselves a chance, because most people, frankly, wouldn't. Most people at that Six Love point, it's, maybe it's 6063, maybe it's 6060, but again, most people aren't able to turn matches like that around. So what can we do to have a chance to fight, and to put ourselves in a position where it's at least possible?
Yeah. So hopefully from a listener perspective, we've given you some things to think about in terms of how tennis matches are actually going to go, the difficulty of it, and embracing that struggle, embracing that suffering so that you can get yourself to the finish line, and then hopefully you're present enough to take advantage of any opportunities that come about in the end. So we'll share some extra stuff in terms of the show notes with the article and the Nadal piece. So you can get more on that for today's episode in the show notes. But thank you all for listening. If you have any feedback or questions for me and Josh, please email us at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you have an opportunity, please rate and review the podcast as it helps other people find us on all the different platforms. Additionally, please subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, including YouTube, so you can be notified of new episodes. And you can also check us out on Instagram. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiq/membership, where you can learn about the benefits of being a part of the Tennis IQ podcast community. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon in our next episode.